The designated hour having arrived, I call to order this special meeting of Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum Podcast, the podcast local governments need to do business in the chair. It's me, Daniel J. Bolin. On our agenda today, we're here live at the American Planning Association, Chicago Metro Section, Bar Exam Planning Law Section. But first, let's take the roll. We've got a partner here at Ansel Glink. His land use and zoning advice has helped dozens of communities achieve their economic development goals. He graduated from Chicago Kent College of Law, and we're going to ask him about it. Greg Jones is here.
Hi, Dan.
Greg, what was one of your favorite memories from law school? Let me set this up a little bit. Set the scene. The bar exam planning law session, you and I just spoke at it here at the Haymarket Pub. APA CMS has had us out here for 4 years in a row for a law school simulation where we ask planners questions based on real cases, kind of an examination, if you will, similar to what we experience passing the bar. And it's neat for them to see what we go through. Your law school experience at Chicago Kent, tell us a bit about it. What's one of your favorite memories?
Sure. I learned all sorts of fun and valuable things at Chicago Kent. Like one of my student friends taught me how to roll cigarettes.
No.
Yeah, it happened. I don't smoke, but I thought it was pretty neat to learn how to at least roll the cigarettes.
Is this a new, side hustle for you, rolling cigarettes?
Could be. You never know. I'm not going to close any doors. But, yeah, law school's great. It's time you never forget.
That's true. But for me personally, going back, I went to law school at the University of Illinois.
I'm familiar with it.
And there are two different kinds of law students. There's the folks that went to undergrad at Illinois and stayed straight through for law school. I went to undergrad at Illinois, left, worked in the Illinois House for a couple years, and then came back to Champaign. The people that had been there for 7 years were ready to get out of Champaign. Whereas I, on the other hand, was thrilled to be back in a place that I never thought I would be back in again. And while they were tired of going to CAMS, I was ready to go back like it was the first time all over again. Stand in line at Murphy's in the cold for no good reason. And studying the law very hard.
Of course. Yeah. And having been someone who's personally experienced the joys of Champaign-Urbana, I can absolutely relate to
it. That's right. There are other kinds of people that don't exclusively go to school at the University of Illinois. That's fine. You went to school. You were working while you were going to law school.
I was.
True?
So I kind of working off your theme of there being two types of students in law school. I had a similar experience. There were the full-time students who went to law school during the day, and I don't know what they did with the rest of their time. And then there was the part-time students who worked during the day and then went at night, and we were very much the ogres that lived under the bridge. But you know, we wear that badge with pride, and I think we're better for it.
That's true. And, Greg, to this day, I still think you're an ogre.
Right. And that's fair.
Well, anyways, we just talked to the folks at the APA CMS. We talked about some of the most recent important planning law cases. And I think one of the cool parts of this was they got to pick the cases that they wanted to hear about. We kind of had a menu of topics, and they chose from them. And so it was neat to see. I know what I think is interesting, but it's neat to see, hear from planners, a group of planners, land use professionals that were here today, what they thought was interesting and important to learn about for their practice. What were some of the favorite cases that you talked about today?
So one case that I thought that was particularly interesting involved the village of Bolingbrook and a lawsuit where Bolingbrook had tried to, or actually successfully, encouraged ComEd to annex a ComEd-owned property into the village for the purpose of completely surrounding another piece of property that Bolingbrook wanted to forcibly or involuntarily annex into the village. So the village, after kind of working with ComEd, they managed to get ComEd to enter into an annexation agreement that, among other things, excused ComEd from paying taxes, complying with building codes, zoning codes, or paying any fees associated with the annexation. Now, the agreement and another odd provision also authorized ComEd to disconnect its property from the village whenever it saw fit, and it waived the village's ability to object to that. So this is a really strange agreement.
Yeah.
Commonly, you know, when a community annexes a property, they want them to comply with their codes and local laws, and they want them to pay the fees. But not Bolingbrook in this case.
No.
So Bolingbrook approved the annexation agreement, annexed the ComEd property, and then the following month they forcibly annexed this other property that, as a result of the ComEd annexation, had been completely encircled by village property. So it, it met the statutory requirements for forced annexation. Well, the owner of the property that had been completely surrounded didn't particularly care for that, didn't want to be annexed into or a part of the village of Bolingbrook, so they sued. And they claimed that the annexation was a sham.
No.
It was void.
No.
And as a result, the village had failed to meet the statutory criteria to annex forcibly their property.
Oh, snap.
So, yeah, it was a real throwdown. So Bolingbrook alleged that it had complied with all of the statutory requirements. They did their job. They sent out the notices. They talked to all the folks they needed to in advance. They held the required meetings. Everyone was invited and could participate. And Bolingbrook also argued that if they took those explicit statutory steps, that the annexation couldn't be invalidated. Now, the court had a different view. They claimed that the village's annexation was, in fact, a sham, and that the annexation agreement, which excused ComEd again from complying with local laws or paying fees or paying taxes, and granting, in particular, ComEd the right to disconnect, so to de-annex.
You know,
de-annex, yeah, that's well put. From the village, made the transaction a sham. So this is a really interesting case because it signals the willingness, at least from a third district appellate court, to wade into the terms of the annexation agreement and evaluate whether or not the annexation was, you know, fair in some terms, and whether you know, the community was actually bargaining on equal footing. So, you know, it's a case with a lot of strange facts, including a letter from Bolingbrook's attorney to ComEd saying that we only want to annex you so we can annex the other property, which is odd and relatively yeah. uncommon. But it's, you know, a good shot across the bow for communities that are thinking about aggressively pursuing territorial expansion, and, you know, a pitfall to avoid, because it's clear from this case that courts will take a look at the terms of the agreement to determine whether or not it's on the up and up.
In a word, or a couple of words, sham wow.
Sham wow indeed, Dan. Sham wow indeed.
That was a good one to hear about today. What were some other important cases that we talked about today, or even just like general ideas or topics that came up that you thought were interesting?
Yeah, we talked about the Liquor Control Act, which is incredibly appropriate as we sit in a bar right now. And it seems that every time I do one of these sessions, we're in a bar. I'm not complaining. This is great.
Greg, it's the only way we could get you on the podcast.
This is true.
Promise drinks.
Thanks for coming to my home turf. We talked about the Liquor Control Act and the recent amendment passed by the legislature, which now vests municipalities with the authority to allow new liquor-serving establishments within the buffer, the statutory buffer, surrounding churches and schools and other sensitive uses.
Yeah.
That's timely and certainly a common-sense solution to what we've been dealing with over the last few decades, which is a long list of exceptions or special legislation that's been
right.
passed by the legislature to allow individual bars to open. Just kind of a silly result.
Right, and that that was one thing that the General Assembly did last year. They put an end to this like burdensome requirement to ask for an act of the state legislature to get an exception to this distance prohibition.
You're right.
But you might have mentioned it already. It is loud in here. Sorry for the listeners. But in order to take advantage of this new power, local governments, local liquor commissioners need to have an ordinance that allows them to do this.
You're right. It's a great point, and it's important for our listeners to understand that. It's you need to have basically an authorizing ordinance that grants the local liquor commissioner, which is typically the mayor, the village president, to grant exceptions to that buffer requirement. So it's a two-step process. First, you enact that ordinance, and then when you have a liquor-serving establishment that wants to locate closer to a church than they otherwise would be able to, then the mayor or village president can grant authority to do that.
I'm Catholic. They serve drinks at church every week. That's neither here nor there. Do you have any final thoughts for our listeners before I know that your beer's getting low before you need to get another drink?
I can't possibly top that. The APA CMS bar exam was a great success. I want to thank APA for having us.
No, it's a fun event every year. I look forward to it. They're a fun group. I enjoy it having you here today, and talking about planning law with you is one of my favorite things to do. So I'm glad that you were here today, Greg. Even though I called you an ogre and said all these other mean things about you,
I've been called much worse, Dan.
On a podcast.
Thick skin.
Thank you, Greg. We'll be back after a brief recess.
Thanks, Dan.
And we're back. Ansel Glink's Forum Podcast live at Haymarket Pub and Brewery. Something just crashed behind the bar. It's to prove that we're in a real brewery. So it's the bar exam, the APA CMS. If we didn't explain it before, it's also a play on words that it's a exam that takes place in a bar. That's the other pun that, or double entendre.
Double entendre.
That we're doing. We're here. Greg Jones went back to the bar. But we have another member of the bar here. She's an attorney at Ansel Glink. She's a prosecutor and litigates abandonment, demolition, and foreclosure cases for our land use group. She graduated law school from DePaul University, and we're going to ask her about it. Megan Mack is here.
Thank you, Dan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great.
What was your favorite memory from law school?
Oh, Dan, so many.
I think you have, like, maybe one or two.
Dan, you know, as somebody who worked full-time and went to law school at night and accomplished a lot on the home front, you know, not really a whole lot of memories.
I think the things accomplished on the home front were possibly more memorable than what was accomplished in the classroom, for sure.
Probably.
You're making me feel like a slacker only going to law school full time. You and Greg both were working and going to law school at the same time. I don't know how you did it.
Yeah, well, probably didn't have a lot of law school friends.
that's okay. You have lots of friends now. We made them at the APA CMS bar exam.
We did meet a lot of new friends tonight.
Today, we talking to them about our favorite topic, planning law.
I'm sorry. There's so much silverware crashing.
Yep. Poor engineer Rick isn't here, but I think he might be like crying somewhere because he has to clean up his audio. Sorry, Rick. But we wanted this authentic experience for our listeners. the APA CMS bar exam, what were some of the favorite cases that we talked about today?
You know, the group really wanted to talk about takings. They wanted to talk about food trucks. I'm trying to think. They were really also interested in a comprehensive plan case. But if you don't mind starting with the food truck case, I think that's a really important one.
I think it is. What happened in that case?
So we were specifically talking about the case of LMP Services, Inc. versus the City of Chicago. And this case is actually one that came out of the first district, but it's now on appeal. Sorry, it's getting a little rowdy behind us right now. So in 2012, the City of Chicago passed an ordinance that expanded food truck operations within the city. So this allowed food trucks to prepare on-site rather than in just a commercial kitchen, and it allowed various location operation and inspection regulations. The ordinance allowed the city to establish what they called fixed stands, where there'd be parking space for food trucks to be specifically reserved.
Sure.
And outside of these fixed stands, the ordinance allowed food trucks to park in streets for up to 2 hours, but it did prohibit trucks from parking within 200 feet of any restaurant. And in addition, the ordinance required food trucks to have a permanently installed and functioning GPS device. However, after the ordinance was approved, LMP filed a lawsuit challenging two provisions of the food truck ordinance. First, it challenged a 200-foot distance requirement, claiming that requirement violated the due process and equal protection. And then second, it alleged that the GPS requirement violated search, seizure, and privacy protections from the Constitution. The trial court found in favor of the city, and the court, in issuing its opinion, which eventually was in favor of the city, said that the right to pursue a profession, in this case specifically to operate a food truck, is not a fundamental right for substantive due process. So accordingly, and this is really the most important part of that,
sure,
the city only had to show a rational basis for that restriction. And in doing so, the court concluded that the city satisfied that standard because they were able to show that the restriction was intended to strike a balance between fixed restaurants, because fixed restaurants, they pay real estate taxes,
right,
they pay other fees to the city, and food trucks don't. And the court also noted that there's no constitutional right to conduct your business from the city street or from a sidewalk.
Right.
So the court rejected, also rejected RPM, LMP's other argument that GPS requirement was violating the Constitution by not finding that there was a seizure or a search because the city wasn't physically entering into these food trucks and actually placing a GPS device as LMP was arguing. So what's important, I think, to recognize is because the Supreme Court has decided to take on this appeal, which you and I were talking about earlier, and that's discretionary, is now are we looking at, you know, this being different than a rational basis for the restriction?
Yeah, the rational basis for the listener, you may know, in a substantive due process case, the government just has to have a good reason to establish a rational basis to support regulations and ordinary regulations. There are certain kinds of regulations that get intermediate scrutiny or strict scrutiny if there's like a race-based classification, a gender-based classification. But food, there's not a fundamental right to do food trucks.
Right.
although I patronize them often.
Me too. I love a good food truck.
But for local governments, kind of concerning to hear that the Supreme Court took this case up. It was recently argued. I watched the oral argument online because the Illinois court's Twitter was tweeting about it. I'm kind of a nerd, and I wanted to watch it, and so. But it was interesting to see, and it'll be interesting to see what the Illinois Supreme Court does with this case. You would think that they wouldn't take the case up to just pat the appellate court on the back and say you got it right,
right?
Because it's a discretionary when it goes up to the Supreme Court, but. I would have to think it's so easy to satisfy rational basis, and for something like this, I would expect the city to prevail. So we've talked about this case on the podcast before. It's an important one. It's good to update everyone where it's at. We're waiting on a decision from the Illinois Supreme Court, and the planners wanted to hear about it today.
Right, they did. Another case that they wanted to hear about, I think this might have been actually one of the very first cases that we talked about, and I don't know if it was just the particular issue itself was related to nuisances. And so the case is Adcock v. City of O'Fallon.
Uh-huh.
It's a fifth district case that came out in April of 2018.
Southern Illinois.
Yep.
I used to live there.
I think I was aware of that, Dan.
I lived in Olney, home of the white squirrels.
Wow.
Yeah, they have albino
little
white...
Little known fact, huh?
I think it's famous. It's a well-known fact. They have under their local ordinances, the white squirrels have the right-of-way in the city of Olney.
You know, Dan, actually, I'm dying for you to talk to me about more right-of-way cases.
No, tell us about. Sorry, I interrupted.
Illinois. Not at all.
We're in Southern Illinois.
You can talk about that next. Yes.
We're in Southern Illinois.
In this particular case, the Adcocks sued the city and the developer of the land near their property, claiming that both are responsible for the flooding that was occurring on their property. And in response, the city filed a motion to dismiss. And in that motion, they argued that the city wasn't responsible because, one, it had no duty to inspect or to maintain the private drainage system. Two, the city hadn't created the flooding. And three, that the city isn't liable for stormwater diverted by the developer or the neighboring property. The circuit court agreed and dismissed the case against the city. And, of course, then the Adcocks appealed. The appellate court went and rejected the Adcock's argument that the city should be responsible for the damages that resulted from the diversion of stormwater from the nearby development. They noted when they rejected their argument that the diversion of the stormwater from the nearby development wasn't created by the city, and that actually the developer's action with the Adcocks had already been settled and there had been a full release. And in addition, there had been no evidence to convince the appellate court that the city should be responsible for fixing any of the plaintiff's flooding issues. And so while this is maybe more of a simple case, this is definitely, I think, a case that I think most municipalities feel they've dealt with this issue. And in fact, you know, even this morning I was in court dealing with a very similar issue for a client. So I think it's an important case to be aware of and for municipalities to be aware of that the finding in this court, by the appellate court, was important for them.
That's good to know. Any other thoughts about what happened at the APA bar exam today? Oh, you wanted to ask me about right-of-way management.
I did want to ask you about, and thank you so much for reminding me. You know, I was actually wondering if you could talk to me a little bit more about scooters.
One of the greatest Muppet characters of all time.
He had a sister,
Skeeter. he was responsible for running the Muppet Show. Without him, it would be impossible. But I think you were asking about dockless scooters.
And I'm going to disagree with you, that being the most my favorite Muppet, but we'll take that challenge somewhere else. If you could talk to me about scooters and right-of-way management, I would love to hear more about it.
One of the things that the planners today were talking about, wanted to hear about, is dockless scooters. They're popping up everywhere. Right-of-way management is one of the important issues that I think municipalities are going to be facing in the coming years. Not just with these micro-mobility technologies, but we're talking about small wireless facilities. There's increasing demands on the public right-of-way. Right-of-way management is going to be an important thing. We're going to be talking about it at the APA National Conference in San Francisco in April. Session called Right-of-Way Management, Scooters to Small Cells. Check it out if you're going to be there. What we talked about today was we talked about some new guidance from the International Municipal Lawyers Association, and some of the issues that they address in their guidance are managing for-profit use of the public right-of-way, how economically disadvantaged areas can access these devices, these dockless scooters, and how to manage data collection and protect user privacy. So it's incredibly important. There's no one way to do it, as the guidance explains. And I think there's no question that there's authority for local governments to manage their right-of-way. So it's not a question of authority, really. But it's more of a question of how do you work out these agreements and permits, and whether you do a pilot program or a full go full program. It's important to see. So if you're interested in taking a look at these IMLA guidelines, I'm happy to share them. Email us at podcast@ancillinc.com. Speaking of right-of-way, another thing that we talked about today was recreational property and tort immunity.
There was a lot of interest in tort immunity cases.
Right. It's been a hot issue for local governments. We talked about it on the podcast before, a case about out of the city of Danville. There was another case last year having to do with...
Isn't that the one that occurred on Lakeshore Drive?
No, the one we talked about today was on the Lakefront Path.
Bike path.
Where I run most mornings, but I've been lazy about lately.
Maybe you should take up rollerblading.
Oh my gosh! With the freezing ice that we've been having,
wait till spring comes.
Yeah, we'll wait till spring. But this case was I think Cohen versus Chicago Park District. Trying to pull up my notes, but they're dropping glasses behind the bar. Yep, Cohen versus Chicago Park District. This is a case where a crack in the lakefront path was reported to the Chicago Park District. They put it in their rapid repair program and bid out the work within less than 30 days. They had a policy in place. It's incredibly important. This case went all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court after a cyclist got injured and he sued the park district and said they could have done more. They could have barricaded off the crack. His tire got stuck in the crack. He must have flipped over his bike or something and hurt his shoulder. And he sued the park district. He said they should have fixed this in a different way or managed it in a different way. Supreme Court found that the park district had tort immunity because then maybe they were negligent, but they were not willful and wanton. There's not willful and wanton misconduct, so they had a disregard for the well-being of the plaintiff and the public. After they did receive notice of the sidewalk crack, they did take action to fix it. and they had a policy in place to do it. And just like we talked about after that City of Danville case, it's important to have policies to manage not just your sidewalks, but your recreational property too, to make sure that it's not just a good way to establish immunity in case somebody sues you over
right.
it.
Right.
It's also just like good policy to make sure you're taking care of your property and making sure and taking necessary steps to make sure folks don't get hurt.
Right.
So that's enough of me talking.
You know, Dan, I was actually though kind of surprised, and I don't mean to make you talk again so quickly, but I was actually surprised that we didn't have any questions about the proposed cannabis legislation.
Yeah, the proposed cannabis legislation, recreational cannabis, stay tuned. We're going to be talking a little bit more about it on a future episode of this very podcast. I think maybe it's because it's not fully baked yet.
Right.
The cannabis legislation.
No pun intended, right?
But the negotiations are ongoing, and it is time for local governments, municipalities to start thinking about recreational cannabis, what that means for them as employers, what that means for them regulating cannabis-related uses, retail, other establishments. This is all going to come up and is just expected to happen this session. So we'll definitely delve into that deeper on a future podcast. So, Megan, it looks like, do you have any final thoughts? Looks like your beer's getting low. But do you have any final thoughts to share with us about the APA bar?
No, I thought it was a great turnout, and I thought there was a lot of thoughtful consideration going into all the questions and answers, and I appreciated the feedback that we got from the crowd, and it was nice to see there were people from. I had an opportunity to talk to some of the people that attended afterwards, and we had several planners from Wisconsin. We had,
oh, wow.
Yeah, we had we really touched not just the planners that live and work in the city, but we had a great showing from the suburbs as well. And so it was nice to meet so many people. And
I'm sure they were here first and foremost for the planning law. It probably helped that it was at Haymarket Pub and Brewery.
It's a great place.
This is a fun environment.
It's almost too much fun to continue with the podcast because it's getting really difficult to talk.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll be right back. And we're back here with Megan Mack at the APA CMS Bar Exam After Party. It's Haymarket Pub and Brewery. Crazy fun. But it is a special meeting, and we have to have public comment. So let's take a look at some of the questions that we get. The local high school principal called our police chief to request the village assign a school resource officer to campus. The police chief has a candidate in mind, but wants to know if she could just assign whomever she wants. Are there any requirements for appointing a school resource officer?
So the answer is that, according to Public Act 100-984, which became effective January 1st, 2019, requires the Law Enforcement Training Standards Board to develop a training program for school resource officers, also called SROs, by December 31st of 2019. The law states the training program shall be created in consultation with organizations demonstrating expertise and or expertise in the areas of youth and adolescent developmental issues, educational administrative issues, prevention of child abuse and exploitation, youth mental health treatment, and juvenile advocacy. All SROs will need to be certified after taking the course. The Act does provide an opportunity for a waiver of the training requirement for an officer whose prior training and experience meets waiver criteria to be developed by the Standards Board.
That's an important new law to know. You can't just appoint anybody anymore to just go be a school resource officer, which I suppose is a good thing to have the extra training.
Absolutely.
to work with students. Good new law to know about. We've had public comment. We've had a great time here at the bar exam, but now it's time to move on to the Department of Public Works. Megan, do you have any upcoming speeches, publications, conferences to talk about?
Yeah, no, not that I can think of off the top of my head, but thanks for asking, Dan.
Oh, you're being too humble.
I know that you do, though.
You just edited a recent In the Zone publication that just came out. Tell us about In the Zone, what it is, what's in it.
So In the Zone is a quarterly publication that the Zoning and Land Use Group puts out. It came out earlier this week.
Right.
And this quarter's edition features an article on homelessness.
You work with him.
It was written by David Warner. And it's an excellent piece. And actually, the entire article was published in ELGL. And then...
Engaging local government leaders. Check out their website, elgl.org. David Warner, his article is there. And you can read about it in the Zone. It's homelessness is an issue that's being an increasing challenge for communities, suburbs in our area. They've really done a lot of good work with it out west, but it's kind of an intractable problem, so even with all the work they've done.
And so the rest of the issue also includes a bunch of case law updates. There have been a lot of land use and zoning cases that have come out since we last published an issue, so we have a lot of updates in there. And John Redding, who's a new associate with Ansel Glink, he also helped edit it. So I think you'll find that there's a lot of great information in this new issue.
If you want to subscribe to In the Zone, email us at podcast@anselglink.com. We'll get you hooked up. And for me, I've got the National Planning Conference coming up in San Francisco. We'll be talking about regulating short-term rentals. We'll be talking about right-of-way management, everything from scooters to small cells. And I'll be there with my friend David Silverman, who's talking about intergovernmental dynamics, politics, laws, and schoolhouses. Before we go, just want to remind everyone to subscribe and leave us a review wherever podcasts are heard. We prefer good reviews. Email us your questions and show ideas at podcast@anselglink.com. And as always, you can visit us online at forum.anselglink.com. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Got a motion.
Second, all in favor, the ayes have it. We'll see you next time at Ansel Glink's Forum Podcast.